Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Will Hunter Biden's baby mama blow open the corruption case into the Bidens? It's the Will Cain podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? And welcome again. I'm always glad to have you. Please download, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment at Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. I don't know what the hardest thing to do is in America, but I have a feeling it might be getting a new driver's license. I got to tell you something. I've been working on this for months. For months, I've been working on getting a Texas driver's license. Exchanging my New York driver's license once again to, at least on the roads of Texas, being a Texas driver. It's awful, man. First of all, you go online and you make an appointment, and these appointments are scheduled sometimes 60 miles away and sometimes 2 months out. And then, God forbid, something come up in the middle of this long scheduled out appointment. In my life, which operates roughly on, at best, about a 36-hour schedule, meaning I know where I'm going to be and what I'm going to be doing at best 36 hours ahead of time. It's hard to say, no, you know what? On April 27th, I've got to be in Gainesville, Texas to make sure I'm at the DMV. And so I missed, this is par for the course for me, I missed my appointment to get a driver's license. Now, the last thing I wanted to do was delve back into the world that was supposed to make our lives all the more easy, the internet. The last thing I wanted to do was get onto another government-run website to click through some 1995 scroll-down menus to find yet another appointment, this time for October. So I thought, here's my plan. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to drive to my hometown. I'm going to drive to Grayson County, Texas. I'm going to Sherman. Why? I don't know. It's not like I know people that work at the DMV. I just know it's friendlier environs. And for that, I was right. I showed up on a Thursday morning. A friend of mine and I drove up. He was in a similar predicament, looking to get a new driver's license from an out-of-state issuance. And I showed up at 8 a.m. Doors open at 8. And immediately I'm met with, ooh, should have been here at 6:30. What? The line was out the door at 6:30 to try to get one of the few, you know, grace of God hand-given appointments for that day. Nevertheless, it was small-town Texas and definitely friendly. And whereas maybe in Dallas or definitely in New York City, I would have been turned away not just with indifference, but having given someone who works for the government the opportunity for malice, I would have been turned away and had my feelings hurt. No, I was accepted with, okay, guys, let's see what we can do. All right, can I get you in here back here late this afternoon? No, who knows? I got to record a podcast. I don't know. I need to be home. I need to take my kids to soccer practice. You know, I don't know, life. So no, but I can come back tomorrow morning. Okay, let me see what I can do. And now, you know what? There's a human being. There's a human being, and I mean that literally and figuratively, involved in the process. And my man Alan was a human being, and he got me an appointment, both of us, for 8 a.m. the next day. And it was also important because there is a ton of stress around having all the right documents. And let me tell you something. I'm talking original birth certificate. I'm talking not a photocopy of your Social Security card. I am talking two forms of a proof of residence, your old driver's license, and a pint of blood. It's something else. I have had passports issued with less of an obstacle course. I've done everything. I think the only thing possibly that I would put on the same level of pain and punishment in a system designed to ensure that you will not accomplish your task on the same level as getting a new driver's license might be buying a weapon. Even in a place like Texas with the background checks and Knicks and I don't know, everything else, but certainly in California or New York. But this whole process, it's like we're in Greece and I want to open a home remodeling business and I've got to grease the palms of every bureaucrat within a 3-province radius. And then maybe if I have the right form and stamp, I get to begin making a living. But the whole thing is designed for me to go, hands up, I quit. So I don't have an original copy of the registration of the second car we own, the one that my wife drives. Got to return to Dallas, come back the next morning for an appointment. Interestingly, my friend also didn't have the right documents for the registration of the car. So we both said, let's come back. You know what? We're going to go, you know, we're going to make this fun. Let's go shoot. Let's go to the gun shop. Let's go to the range. Let's go out in the country. Let's go shoot. Which, for what it's worth, we did. Super good time. Shot a bunch of awesome guns. I know what I want. I've got the I want. I have 3 different guns that I want. Either a Benelli or a Beretta shotgun. A SIG 365 handgun. And I don't know which AR I want, but I want it. And I want all the bells and whistles. I want that thing to have red dots. And I want it to play rap music as I shoot it. I want it. I want it. I want it. But I was joking about the rap music, but, you know, I want it to be like that boat that you wakeboard behind where you're like, there's not another possible attachment I could put on this boat. I got the speakers. I got the rack. I've got the wakeboards. I've got everything that I need. The bikinis. And I want that in the form of this gun. But I go back the second day and I walk up and Alan's not working the door. And now I'm tense. I'm real tense. Okay, this time the lady didn't catch her name. Not as friendly, but ultimately wanted to make this work. Don't think she was looking for an excuse for this not to work, but she also wasn't going to hold my hand. And so I'm shaking. No, I'm not joking. I'm shaking as I'm going through my paperwork. As it turns out, my wife's car has just passed registration. I'm thinking, oh my God, this is it. This is it. I failed once again. Another hour drive, another half a day, flush down the toilet. She's like, I'm going to let you through. And I'm like, thank you. I go sit down, and who's there? My man, Alan. My man, Alan. Okay. And then, like, I'm dropping my license on the floor. I'm pushing paperwork. I'm signing documents. And the whole time, I legitimately feel like I'm in front of the East German Stasi, and I don't know how this meeting's going to go. But I think there's a wall out back if I have the wrong paperwork. I think there's a wall out back, and I think that I'll never come back, even though Alan is super friendly. And I'm going to tell you something. I'm not going to bury the lead. I got taken out back. I was put up against the wall. Okay, I go through the thing. I give the 2 thumbprints. I take my picture. He says, oh, you've had a Texas license before. I said, yes, I have, proudly. And then he goes, look here. And he showed me a computer screen with my last one, which was, when was the last time I have a Texas license? My man Alan was like, hey, the years have been kind. You know, I see the before and after pictures. And I'm like, finally, I'm getting back to being a Texan. And by the way, now I can buy my guns and I don't have to run through the New York state laws because I don't have a New York license. It really is crazy. Look, I don't care what people think. We had that conversation in the previous episode of the Will Cain podcast with Peter St. Ange. Like, I am actually ready for the 1880s. Like, I think we need to go back to the Wild Wild West. Like, I think we're better off without all of this. I have serious questions, you know. All my friends who are liberal, do you really think the bang for their buck has been there on making our lives better with all of this? Like, I get the feeling, and I'm going to push you into an extreme, but you want everything to run like the DMV, you know, ineffectively, maximum pain, multiple trips, long lines, like everything. That's how healthcare, business permitting, the IRS and taxes, Border Patrol, everything should work with a ton of pain and minimum efficiency and ultimately not accomplishing your stated goal, which is probably a lie in that its stated goal is not to give me a new license, is not to control immigration policy. I mean, I just think one trip to the DMV or one interaction with the IRS and you too could be ready for the Wild Wild West. You too could be ready to rewind the clock to 1880. So there I am. I've got everything set to go. Right. And then Alan, and he maintains the same friendly tone of voice several times and even kind of gave me the okie doke in the middle of it. He's like, I'm sorry to tell you, as he goes through my paperwork. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry to tell you. It looks like you have everything you need to get your Texas driver's license. And I was like, Alan, don't do that to me. And I'm starting to relax because we're hitting the joking tone and I can see the finish line. Right. checker flags, straight ahead. And then, in the same tone of voice, after the picture, after the fingerprinting, same tone of voice, he goes, "All right, Mr. Kane, I'm sorry to tell you today, I will not be able to issue you a Texas license. It appears that there is a hold on your New York license, that you have a suspended license, and there's nothing I can do. If the state of New York has this ding on your record, then I can't issue you a license in Texas." I'm like, what? What? Which, by the way, that was bad news on many levels. Many levels. Because if you think the Grayson County DMV is hard to accomplish the level of humanity, let me introduce you to the Dallas County DMV. And if you think the Dallas County DMV is hard to find humanity, wait until you get to the state of New York. He tells me my license is suspended. He does not know why. He gives me a number. My friend's still working on his license. I think, what the heck? I've got some time to kill. I'm calling New York. I'm calling this number. Okay, big mistake for my mental health. Now I'm in phone tree land, right? Hit one, say yes, state your social security. They call themselves virtual assistants now. I mean, there's no bigger downbeat than an automated phone tree, euphemism, virtual assistant. I saw a tweet that somebody said, if you ever want to know someone's real personality, it's a recording of how they say representative. How do I skip pushing one and two? Representative. Finally, I get a representative on the phone. Yes, it says here you have a suspended license for lack of proof of insurance. Yeah, but I haven't been in New York. My car is registered in Texas. It's insured in Texas. Do you have proof that you surrendered your plates? I surrendered my plates. I sent them in. Do you have the receipt? Receipt? What does that mean? I mailed you my plates. Did you mail me something back? I don't remember a receipt. Maximum pain. And then at that moment, admittedly, while my tone was getting perhaps a little curt, beep, 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 beep. Hangs up on me. I don't know if he hung up on me. I don't know if the phone tree system, I don't know if I triggered a landmine. I don't know what happened. But guess what? I don't have a Texas driver's license. I was taken out back. The Stasi had their day. The bureaucracy wins. I'm stuck in the mud. My tires are spinning. Months. I don't know how to get out of this hole. New York has me. They won't let me go. And I find it not only as though I was sent back to go, I was knocked off the game board. I now have to go through New York administrative bureaucracy and DMV, back to Texas appointment making administrative DMV website, to end up with the ever elusive appointment to find humanity back maybe in Grayson County, Texas, to get the Texas DMV. And by the way, it's worth this point of honesty. This is what I'm worst at. The best way to shove Will into the absolute realm of unproductive inactivity is give me a bunch of forms, appointments, phone trees, and assignments. And I got to tell you, I'm in jail. I'm off the game board. I'm out. I don't know. I may never drive again, or I guess either buy a gun. I don't know. At this point, I think my only option is to head south for Mexico. I don't know what to do. I just know they got me, and they're going to make sure they never let me go. I did get to shoot some guns and blow off some steam and get the I wants. So, better luck to you than me in being an American. My guest today is the New York Post's Miranda Devine. She has, from the start, been all of the story of Hunter Biden's laptop and the potential corruption and influence peddling scheme of the Biden family, potentially including the president of the United States, Joe Biden. There have been several new advancements in this investigation in the past week and a half, including a whistleblower, an FBI whistleblower who alleges that he has direct knowledge of Joe Biden involved in a cash from a foreign power, not China, cash for policy change scheme. What does this mean for the truth? What does this mean for accountability? I think you are about to find out more. And what we will learn by the end of this conversation with Miranda Devine is the truth and accountability add up to your knowledge, not handcuffs. You are the handcuffs. And what you choose to do with this information when you vote. Here is the New York Post's Miranda Devine. The New York Post, Miranda Devine, so good to have you on the Will Cain podcast once again. You know, Miranda, since the last time we spoke, there seems to be some movement, some development on the investigation into the business dealings of not just Hunter Biden, but of course, potentially President Joe Biden. But whether or not it's you or me, whoever tweets or addresses this subject is met with, I think, a little bit of a fair criticism. Hey, is any of this going to matter? Is any of this ever going to amount to anything? In fact, I think I saw someone on your Twitter feed ask you that exact question. So as we work through a couple of these newest revelations, let's start with this. Is any of it in your mind amounting to anything?
Look, I think it is. You know, there are whistleblowers that have come forward, two just in the last couple of weeks who appear to be extremely credible. One is the IRS whistleblower we've been told about, who is he was dismayed by what he saw as political interference from Biden appointees in the DOJ into that five-year now investigation into Hunter Biden criminal investigation in Delaware. The other one, more recently, this week is also said to be by James Comer and Chuck Grassley to be very credible. Chuck Grassley, of course, has a long history of writing whistleblower protection legislation and of bringing forward whistleblowers from the FBI and elsewhere. So the latest revelation seems to be the strongest of all, and that is it's an allegation that Joe Biden himself accepted bribes from a foreign national in return for some sort of policy change when he was vice president. But, you know, like you and like everybody else, we haven't actually seen the evidence. We're just hearing the lawmakers tell us that they have it, that they're working on it. And, you know, the Republicans have only had subpoena power for, I think it's 100 days, a little over 100 days. So they've done pretty well so far, I think, in getting up to speed and to attracting these whistleblowers. And James Comer has revealed something of what he's found in terms of the money trail from China, which, you know, he's shown us now four Biden family members, bank statements that show that they received money from China in small increments. And, you know, it was spread around and it looks like they were trying to hide it. And he says he has more bank statements that implicate up to 12 Biden family members as having received money from China. And so I think we have to give them some time to amass the evidence. And James Comer has said, I think it's next week, he's going to be issuing a sort of an interim report with what he's found so far. And after that, he will be issuing subpoenas. I think part of what is troubling them is that they're, as James Comer said, their witnesses are being interfered with. There is serious witness tampering happening, and that is illegal. And I think James Comer will be following up his interim report with some actions on that.
Who is tampering with the witnesses?
Looks like it's people around Hunter Biden. You know, there's witnesses, Hunter Biden's former business partners, such as Eric Schwerin, Devin Archer, Rob Walker. You know, at least one of them was showed himself to be willing to be interviewed and to come clean, and he sort of changed his tune now. And Comer seems to have some evidence that that there's been intimidation of those witnesses. And also, he has said that Hunter Biden's lawyers have been sending letters to the banks and financial institutions that he's been subpoenaing for these bank transactions. And the banks have then gotten cold and been reluctant to provide the information. So, it's certainly frustrating and troubling to them. And you also have to remember that unlike the January 6th committee, which the Democrats basically stacked with all of their own people and a couple of never Trumpers, these, you know, the oversight committee and the other committees the Republicans control, they have some pretty rascally Democrats on them, like Jamie Raskin, for instance, or Adam Schiff. And they are completely unscrupulous. They've proven to be so in the past, and they will lie and obstruct and spread misinformation and disinformation about the material and preempt it, and also sit on the Republicans. And I just don't think the Republicans are as good at those kind of dirty tricks as the Democrats are. So they're taking it slow and being extremely careful. And I just hope that their rhetoric matches the evidence, because they certainly are saying some pretty strong things. They're saying this is the smoking gun that will finally nab Joe Biden. Well, you know, I've been working on this for 3 years, and I know that it's not that easy. There's, you know, Joe Biden was involved in this influence peddling scheme and has been doing this for 40 years. He's very practiced at ensuring that he has plausible deniability. So I hope that they're not overpromising.
We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's talk about a few of the pieces of evidence, or a few of the revelations that have come out of this House investigation, the latest being what you just described, which is this second whistleblower who says he has, I don't know, either direct-hand knowledge or has seen the evidence of direct knowledge that Joe Biden was involved in an influence peddling scheme with a foreign power. The suggestion is it is not, whatever this foreign power may be, it is not China.
It's not China.
What do we hope? This actually seems the most on the nose. This has the most promise for at least being directly on topic as opposed to circumstantial around the idea of an influence peddling scheme involving Joe Biden. What do we know about this second whistleblower and what he hopes to offer?
Well, we know that he came to Chuck Grassley, he or she, presuming, that what he's saying is that that there is an FBI form, which is called a 1023 form, which is used just for confidential sources. And it is stored in a special, restricted access, computer server separate from, you know, the system that stores the rest of the witness statements and so on. So it's not easy to access for anybody. And this whistleblower is alleging that, that the information in this from this confidential source to the FBI in June of 2020 alleged that Joe Biden had been involved in a changing policy in return for a bribe with a foreign country. And that country we know is not China. My guess is most likely that it's Ukraine, because Ukraine is the country that Joe Biden had the most power over when he was vice president. He was tasked with the Obama administration to run point there. He traveled there often. He lectured them often about corruption. He boasted famously that he got the prosecutor fired who had been investigating that corrupt energy company Burisma that was paying Hunter Biden $1 million a year. Joe Biden boasted afterwards that he'd held $1 billion or threatened to withhold $1 billion in foreign aid to Ukraine unless they fired that prosecutor, Viktor Shokin. And they did fire that prosecutor, Viktor Shokin, which just brought an end to that investigation into Burisma and into a guy called Slechevsky, who owned Burisma and who was Hunter Biden's business partner. Hunter Biden went fishing with him in Norway. He was the guy who brought Hunter Biden onto the board of Burisma and who was paying him this $1 million, $83,000 a month for 4 years. So that was, that would be my guess, that this is what the whistleblower has, and that somebody came to the FBI, either this whistleblower, or maybe this whistleblower is an FBI insider who has knowledge of that witness coming forward. But I think it's just what Grassley and Comer want to find out is, did the FBI investigate this allegation? Was this allegation credible? Is it real? And, you know, what did you do to look into it? And unfortunately, we've now, this would be about the fourth or fifth time that we've seen the FBI burying and suppressing information that was detrimental to Joe Biden before the 2020 campaign. If this is another case of that, where they just buried an allegation, and all these allegations are saying the same thing, and the FBI had had Hunter Biden's laptop since December 2019. So it is really reckless and corrupt if the FBI buried this very credible information.
It's a reasonable guess. It's an educated guess. Ukraine, I want to take a moment to step back from the details of Hunter Biden and ask you this question, which I think is actually always present, but also occurs to me in the moment. And this isn't designed to absolve Joe Biden. In fact, I think it stands as a bigger indictment of our political system. I like how you describe Joe Biden as being practiced. He's a 40-year politician in Washington, D.C. And there's an element to this. There's an element to this, Miranda, that is shocking, but also an element to this that is unsurprising. Oh, a politician involved in influence peddling. Do you think if we turned over the rocks of every politician, maybe not to this extremity, do you think we'd find stuff like this with most of Washington, you know, involvement certainly in corporate conflicts of interest, but maybe also adversarial powers, world powers with conflicts of interest to American interest in exchange for personal wealth? If this is all true, and I'm going to characterize this through the idea of an allegation, if this is all true, do you think that makes Joe Biden extremely corrupt or normal and par for the course for Washington, D.C.?
Look, I think that's a really good point. Influence peddling is a bipartisan disease in Washington, D.C. It's accepted. I'm not sure that, you know, every single politician is involved in it, but certainly Republicans and Democrats, you know, have practiced it. I think Joe Biden's probably the past master of it. But, you know, if you do it long enough, you come to believe it's okay. And for Joe Biden, I think a lot of this was favor trading, that sort of Tammany Hall style favor trading. And it didn't necessarily result in cash. It would result in his children and his grandchildren getting into the best universities, getting clerkships with judges, getting grace and favor jobs at inflated salaries from Joe Biden's donors. You know, it's a sort of a magic carpet ride for the Biden family, where the usual stresses and strains and concerns that most American families have about how to help their families get along, buy houses and, you know, renovate them and so on, the usual issues that we all work hard for, it just came easily to Joe Biden and his family because of his power and connections. And I think that's an abuse of power. I mean, it is an abuse of power and it is corruption. Whether it's illegal, that's another question. And I think that's why James Comer in his letters makes clear that what his oversight committee is trying to do is to find out if Joe Biden is compromised in the eyes of our adversaries, China. You know, it's one thing, influence peddling, I think, is corrosive and destructive to our polity. But it's another level when you're accepting these bribes from a foreign country, particularly when that country is China, and then you're president and you are making policy that impacts on America's national security.
That is absolutely the end point. That's the end of this conversation, although our conversation is not over. What I'm saying is I want to return to that nail and hammer that you just hit in just a moment. But let's do this. Let me see if I can understand the totality of what has come out so far of this investigation from James Comer and the House. It seems to me it's revealed depth in this investigation on a couple of different levels. First of all, circumstantial. We now have gathered bank statements and bank records and suspicious activity reports that shows money coming from, at the very least, China into shell companies and individuals that have spread out, as he has said, and you just said today, maybe a dozen members of the Biden family. So that's circumstantial evidence of influence peddling or potentially corrosive, corrupt, quid pro quo potential policymaking for the American president. Circumstantial. Then on top of that, we have a whistleblower saying, well, to the extent this has been pursued with the laptop and the very shallow charge, I would say, of whatever these tax charges is with Hunter Biden, even that has been compromised by the DOJ, meaning they're not really looking into it. That's what the first whistleblower has said. Now we have the second whistleblower who seems to be addressing that hammer and nail you just gave us a moment ago, who is saying there is direct evidence of influence peddling. Is there more that I'm missing on the picture that has been painted? Not what you have written about, not what you found with the laptop, but what is new to this investigation under Comer. Is that kind of where we are, what I just described, those three legs of the stool?
Yeah, that's right. I think the money trail is crucial, and then the cover up, which is extensive. It's not just that one whistleblower that you mentioned, but it's from the IRS whistleblower. That's the cover up to protect Hunter Biden in Delaware. But then there's extensive FBI whistleblower information that's come through the last few months to the Republicans, and also that we know, which shows that there was a cover up pretty much from day one to ensure that the laptop didn't see the light of day, to ensure that Tony Bobulinski, Hunter Biden's former business partner, that his interview with the FBI and the content of his three devices that he handed over also were not investigated. That is something I think that we'll see more of, although Christopher Wray is not being at all helpful, no surprise. And then thirdly, we have, as you just said, this new and fresh line, which is the first time that someone has come out and pointed the finger directly at Joe Biden. It's not just that Joe Biden was assisting with his son and his brother's influence peddling scheme and appearing, at meetings and showing himself to be a willing participant. It's that this whistleblower is claiming that Joe Biden changed policy directly in return for a bribe. Now, I don't know if that allegation is true, but we're told that this whistleblower told this to the FBI in June of 2020, and then nothing more was done with it. So that either means that the FBI investigated it and found it that it wasn't credible, but judging by their track record, I might come down on the side of it shows that the FBI buried it. And Chuck Grassley has said that he, even though there's a subpoena to get that document, Chuck Grassley has said that he has no faith that the FBI will hand it over, that while it's currently classified, he sees it could, unclassified, he sees it could suddenly become classified to stop the Oversight Committee getting its hands on it.
We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
So that's my next question. I was going to ask you, Miranda, do you think there will be sort of a break in the dam that we begin to see more whistleblowers step forward? Do you get the sense that has started or it could soon start? But I think I'm going to amend my question to this. Is that if this case were to see the light of day, if the truth were to see the light of the day, how will it see the light of day? Will it come through the form of whistleblowers inside the FBI? Is there a witness out there that all of a sudden tells the truth? How is it that either Comer and his committee, or wherever it comes from, maybe in private to you or, you know, to a reporter, how is it that the story becomes undeniably true?
Well, I think there are two strands to the story. So there's the original story of corruption, and there's the secondary story of the cover-up. I think the cover-up is worse. I think in terms of whistleblowers, we are getting a lot on the cover-up. I think there are enough good people inside, the various agencies who are dismayed and disgusted about being co-opted into what's obviously a political cover-up now. And I think as more pressure is put on those people with subpoenas, with the Oversight Committee and the Weaponization Committee, Jim Jordan and James Comer, and Chuck Grassley and Ron Johnson, calling these people in for hearings, for interviews, I think that the dominoes are starting to fall. You're seeing that already. When it comes to the original story of corruption, I think that's, a slow thing about just collecting evidence. And really, it's the money trail. And that's what James Comer is concentrating on. There may be whistleblowers that do come forward, maybe from China, maybe from the former partners of Hunter Biden. I do know that there are partners who were a witness to Joe Biden's being involved in some of these meetings, meetings that we haven't actually reported on yet, and in some cases was just available on the speakerphone to sort of seal the deal for Hunter. So I think that looks really bad for Joe Biden, but I'm not sure that from what I've heard so far, comes to the level of, you know, criminal charges. But if you talk to someone like Rudy Giuliani, who used to do this thing for a living, he says that he could easily make a RICO case just on the evidence that's there now. I don't know that there would be any stomach for that, to do that to a president or a former president. But it's all moving parts at the moment. I think, though, that the cover-up, there's just the dam has burst and there's just a flood of people coming forward. Mike Morrell, you saw the other day, the former CIA acting director, admitting under oath in his interview with Jim Jordan that, yes, it was Anthony Blinken who spurred him to write that letter discrediting the New York Post story about the laptop and saying that Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation and getting the 51 former intelligence officials to sign that. There's more coming out about that. And I think the other of those 51 former intelligence officials should also come clean when they're interviewed. And if they're not interviewed, they'll be subpoenaed about why they signed it. Many of them, they were told that this was to provide Joe Biden with a talking point during the debate. It was purely a political document, and it worked. It got Joe Biden off the hook. But again, is it illegal? Certainly it should be enough to get those 51 intelligence officials have their security clearances stripped. I don't think that's in doubt.
What do you suspect is the mechanics for how that works, Miranda? So let's work at it from backwards forward. Let's say you're Leon Panetta, okay? Leon Panetta is sitting there one day with no at that moment access to intelligence directly as to the facts of whether or not the laptop is Russian disinformation. But Mike Morrell approaches him and says, hey, everything we're seeing, everything piece of evidence we have is that this is Russian disinformation. And so Panetta accepts Morrell's word as true. Or is it that Panetta is a willing acceptor of the lie, or he's a willing creator of the lie? I'm only using Panetta as an individual symbol among the 51. And is it Morrell that knows he is peddling a lie, or is, because he's the one who testified he's in direct contact with Tony Blinken. Tony Blinken at that point, now Secretary of State, at that point is a political operative, and he is planting this with Mike Morrell. I'm just curious, at what stage of that chain, from Tony Blinken working for Joe Biden as a candidate, to Mike Morrell, who organizes with the 51, you know, intelligence higher-ups, to the 51, do they all, every step of the way, know they are peddling a lie, or is somebody in there creating the lie and selling it as a plausible lie to other ears to echo it?
I think you have to understand the mindset of these people at that time. Polls were showing, this is October 2020, that Joe Biden was going to win. People like Mike Morrell was hoping he would be CIA director under Biden. He was sort of on a promise for that. He didn't get it in the end. Others of those 51 also would have been hoping for a job in the administration, and this was a way to show their fealty. And secondly, all of the people who signed, whether they were, some of them were Republicans. I mean, much was made in the letter about this being a bipartisan document. But it wasn't, you know, it was only bipartisan insofar as Republican and Democrat, but they all shared a loathing of Donald Trump. In fact, there were other people who were approached and who may have signed with anonymously, who were Republicans, people like Dan Coats, and Mike Rogers, who, worked for the Trump administration, but who, Dan Coats did, but who hated Donald Trump. So I think you've got to realize the mentality with these people was they bought the lie from Russia collusion that Donald Trump was an existential threat to this country. And that was their belief. So they were just primed and ready to believe when Mike Morrell sent them this email. Look, he said, we believe that this Hunter Biden, these Hunter Biden emails that we just published in the New York Post, are part of a Russian plot. And we want to write this letter to help Joe Biden, to give him a talking point in the upcoming debate against Donald Trump. So he made no secret of the fact that this was a political letter, but he also implied that he knew more about these emails and that he had some sort of evidence that they were, you know, somehow connected to Russia. And as, you know, twice the acting director of the CIA, his word had a lot of weight. And so I guess he's pushing on an open door. These people, they're looking at their own ambitions and they don't like Donald Trump. They want Joe Biden to win. They take Mike Morrell's word for it.
And his word is based upon the persuasion of the candidate Joe Biden through his emissary, Tony Blinken.
Absolutely.
Who's been rewarded as Secretary of State. Really quickly, before we're out of time together, let's go to Arkansas for just one moment. Hunter Biden involved in this paternity case. Do you see that case as a backdoor into any sort of admission of truth? The judge wants to know, hey, is this a proof of your finances? If that's the case, the judge may not be in pursuit of this, but the obvious implication is the laptop is true, which we know to be the case anyway, but forces Hunter to backdoor into that admission. I don't know. Do you see this as anything more than a tabloid gossip regarding Hunter Biden trying to pretend like he's a deadbeat dad? I mean, he's not a deadbeat dad. He has money, but he's pretending like he's a deadbeat dad to avoid his baby mama. But is there more to that potential out of Arkansas where the judge is saying, what's the role of this laptop?
Yes, there is, because the judge has ordered Hunter Biden to open up his financial life. So he has to put on the table, for instance, how much money he got for selling his paintings in Soho. He has to put on the table how much money he got for BHR, that Chinese equity firm that he owns 10% of, or owned 10% of. You know, we've seen documents now showing that he's offloaded it to his sugar brother, his lawyer, Kevin Morris, who paid off his $2.8 million IRS bill and was also paying his rent on his $20,000 Malibu house, which he's moved out of now. Maybe Kevin stopped paying the rent. And also Kevin Morris, I guess because Hunter's saying he doesn't have any other money, has also been footing the $20,000 a month bill to pay the baby mama for child support. So I think that if Hunter Biden, he's pleading poor, and the judge needs to see that that's true. And so they will be going through his financial records with a fine-tooth comb to see whether or not BHR really is worth as little as he claims, to see if Kevin Morris really does own BHR or if that transaction was never completed. If there is other money that Hunter Biden has stashed away somewhere, I think it's a risk for Hunter Biden, and therefore it's a risk for the White House. And you know, it's just beggars belief that Hunter Biden has opened up this drama in Arkansas at this perilous time for himself and his father, with this criminal investigation about to come to fruition in Delaware, with all these whistleblowers coming out and talking to the the Republicans in the House, you would think the last thing you'd want to do is open up a new front, a new avenue for financial disclosures in Arkansas. But that's what he's done.
All right. The New York Post's Miranda Devine. Always great to speak with you, Miranda. Thank you.
You too, Will. Thanks very much.
There you go. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Miranda Devine. The accountability, the impact of the truth is political. If you enjoyed this episode of the Will Cain Podcast, I hope you will give it a 5-star review and share it with your friends. I'll see you again next time. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts and Amazon Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.